Before I introduce the team, I would like to therefore also apologize to the acting director general. She is one. And also apologize to the team responsible for the role, Mr. Sayyid, for the development of the film. Chairperson, my name is Mustafa Samokonyama, the GDG responsible for public transport. I am with my immediate left, Ms. Cherry, Chief Director responsible for rural and smaller transport. Then next to me, we've got Mr. Nasir, the fuel board, the office in the ministry, for the minister. On my immediate right, I've got Mr. Jamal, the Chief Director responsible for regulation. And then I've got Advocate Masombo, responsible for our legal issues, all our legal issues in the pipeline. For the presentation on the proposed amendment to the regulations of the NRCA, we will therefore, on behalf of Mr. Salisa, will be led by Mr. Jamal.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, honorable members, members of the media, colleagues. I'll be doing a presentation on the proposed amendment to the National Road Traffic Act. The amendment I intended to streamline certain processes and procedures that are contained in the National Road Traffic Act. The presentation is outlined in terms of introduction and basically going through the proposed legislative amendment. The National Road Traffic Act, as you are aware, is the principal act that is responsible for road traffic related matters. It provides for concurrent road traffic matters the scope as follows. Application of the act and the minimum requirements, registration and licensing of motor vehicles, registration of manufacturers, builders and importers, and manufacturers of number plates. It also covers the fitness of drivers, fitness of vehicles, operator fitness, and a process in terms of an appeal in relation to any administrative process taken in terms of the provisions of the National Road Traffic Act. And it also then covers, to a certain extent, interventions that are proposed that is geared at dealing with road safety-related issues. It covers the transportation of dangerous goods by road, and it provides for road traffic signs and the general speed limit. Background continues. It deals with the manner of accidents and incident reporting. Provides for reckless and negligent driving, and it also provides for driving a motor vehicle while under the influence of alcohol or any drugs having a positive effect. It deals with presumptions and legal procedures and the regulations and also the general provisions that would be contained in the National Road Traffic Act. The regulations, obviously, are, as I indicated before, are continuously amended in order to streamline certain processes that, as a department, we have come across, and also then to ensure that if ever there are any road safety interventions, we are able then to make the necessary legislative amendments to ensure that those interventions are contained in the legislation. It provides for knowledge developed and incorporation of vehicle safety standards, dangerous goods standards, and also to cover incidences or processes where you would want to provide for the use of technology in road traffic related matters. key to what is then to inculcate the ethos of good behavior and driver behaviors on drivers, to ensure that when we do interventions, roadside interventions, it also then goes to the driver behavior in terms of ensuring that they abide by the relevant provisions of the National Road Traffic Act. Reduction of fatal accidents, production of safe and reliable vehicles, and also to cover a scenario that would exist in terms of law, where you find that there are gaps that exist in the provisions of the National Road Traffic Act. In line with the decade of action, there are important features that have been identified, which are designed to ensure that those pillars or those interventions assist us in reduction of fatalities on our road. And that process would necessarily require certain interventions or legislative amendments that are proposed or have to be implemented in the National Road Traffic Act. The pillars are outlined are safer vehicles, safer road users, crash responses, safer road and mobility, and road safety management. In terms of the proposed amendment, what we have done is to insert certain definitions in the National Road Traffic Act. One of those definitions deals with block booking, whereby the LCT driver license testing center book spaces for learners or driving licenses, and you find that the members of the public do not have access to those driving license testing centers, because in terms of the booking, they have already been allocated either to a particular individual or a driving school that bring its learners to a driving license testing center. We provide for the consignee legislation that deals with the transportation of loads on public roads, wherein we would then prescribe the requirements in terms of what would be a consignee. We also then deal with the aspect of a person that transports goods above 100,000 kg. We also deal with the issues of reserve booking, whereby the VLTCs would reserve a booking slot for somebody that may have approached a driving school to book for a date when that person is going to undergo a learner's or a driving test. We provide for the processes of waiting facilities that currently or previously was not contained in the National Road Traffic Act. One of the amendments is then to amend Regulation 2 of the National Road Traffic Act that deals with introducing a grade for the examiner of driving license, wherein we intend to introduce grade C and D examiners, indicating that such examiners are qualified to examine and test motor vehicles of any class except for a motor vehicle where a code A and code A1 relating to motorcycle would be a requirement. This is to enable those examiners who do not necessarily have a learner's or a motorcycle driving license to be able to conduct the test as required in terms of the provisions of the NRCA. Regulation 7 of the amendment is amended by providing that the date of liability for the registration of motor vehicle shall also arise in the case of a motor vehicle which was previously in the public and also on the date of issue of a temporary permit issued in terms of Regulation 84. This also is intended to cover instances where manufacturers of motor vehicles would obtain a temporary permit for the testing of motor vehicles when they have that temporary permit. Obviously, it does not entitle them to license that motor vehicle. So what we want to ensure is that when they do those tests of those prototype motor vehicles, they also then take a licensing fee for the usage of the road infrastructure. Regulation 8 of the NRC is amended by providing that an application for the registration of motor vehicle shall ensure that if such vehicle is registered, also be accompanied by a certificate on form RC2. This is a form that we have just inserted in the schedule that covers the application of registration of a motor vehicle. By substituting paragraph G of sub-regulation 2, thereby replacing reference to the old SABS standard and making reference to what the SABS standards are currently referred to being the SANS code. Regulation 13 of the RCA is amended by inserting Regulation 4A, which provides for circumstances under which a motor vehicle shall be recorded as new in the register of motor vehicle. E.g., if it has been registered and was liable for licensing for a third time and it has been manufactured or imported by a manufacturer who is a registered MIB. If it is registered and is liable for licensing for a third time in the Republic and it has been imported by an importer that is not required to be registered as such in terms of the provisions of the National Road Traffic Act, and that importers have been registered as new in the name of the importer in the country of origin and is being registered for a third time in the Republic. To cover a vehicle which was previously registered as new and there was no liability for licensing of those motor vehicles. You will find that a motor vehicle has been registered in the system but it was not allowed to be licensed. So obviously we want to close that gap that exists in terms of the motor vehicle that was registered but it was never licensed. Sub-relation 5 is amended to streamline the circumstances under which a motor vehicle shall be recorded as a used motor vehicle. Amending sub-regulation 6 of regulations by making proper reference to the applicable standard. Regulation 13A is amended by providing that a motor vehicle which was deregistered in terms of regulation 55 as permanently demolished shall not be registered and its part shall not be used to build or repair any motor vehicle. Regulation 15 is amended that in the event where a motor vehicle is introduced into the register of motor vehicles by a manufacturer or importer who is an agent of a registering authority with a pre-homologated number, such motor vehicle shall be deemed to be registered in terms of the provisions of the National Road Traffic Act. Regulation 20 is amended to require that every motor vehicle, whether it is operated on a plastic road, are not to be licensed except for all motor vehicles which are exempt from registration in terms of Regulation 5 of the National Road Traffic Regulations. Regulation 21 is amended by the deletion of paragraph G of the regulation 21, which allows an owner of motor vehicle issued with an exemption in terms of section 81 to make an application to the relevant MEC to declare such motor vehicle as specially classified in relation to motor vehicle license fees. Regulation 32 is amended by inserting sub-regulation 32A, thus requiring that a person or body of persons registered on the indexes system or who wishes to make use of the indexes to submit proof of full name, date of birth, identity number, and residential address. By better providing that the minister may determine different names. by further determining that the minister may make or provide for different dates for compliance with the provisions of the inserted new regulations in 2A in respect of different categories of persons and extend any date as determined. Prescribing a form on which proof of change of particulars shall be submitted to the appropriate registering authority. By such person or body or person. Regulation 46 is amended by providing that if there is any change of name, street or postal address, process, representative or acceptable identification of a registered manufacturer, builder or importer, such MIP, when notifying the chief executive officer of such change, also notify the inspectorate of MIB. Further providing that on receipt of the notification referring to sub-regulation 1, the MEC or the inspectorate of MIB shall evaluate the notification and if satisfied that such notification is in order, update the particulars pertaining to such applicant in the register of MIB. Provides that the MEC, if not satisfied that the notification is in order, he or she may then inform the MIP to submit the necessary amendment to the application. Regulation 50 is amended by setting sub-regulation 50A, providing that if there is a change of name, physical or postal address, proxy, or representative or acceptable identification of the registered manufacturer of number plate, such manufacturer shall within 21 days after such notification notify the MEC of the province concerned of such change. 52 is amended by providing that if the postal or street address, proxy or representative of the title holder or owner of a motor vehicle which is registered in terms of the provisions of this regulation, changes. Such title holder or owner shall within the period of 21 days, after such change, notify the appropriate registering authority. And 55 is amended by providing that the title holder of a motor vehicle, which is permanently demolished, should within a period of 3 months, after the date of on such motor vehicle permanently has become permanently unfit for use, notify the appropriate registering authority on a prescribed form that such motor vehicle is permanently unfit for use as a motor vehicle and to notify the appropriate registering authority of such demolition. Further compelling the owner of a motor vehicle to submit an affidavit of demolition containing the details of the vehicle being deregistered as demolished or to submit a certification of demolition contained in the details where the vehicle was demolished, the date when the vehicle was demolished, and the name and address of the body that operates the demolishing equipment. 56 is amended by inserting sub-regulation 56A, which prohibits a person from operating operating on a public road and not a vehicle which was manufactured after 1 December 2013, unless that motor vehicle is fitted with a metal plate or an adhesive stamp of metal or a plastic label where the vehicle identification number is clearly imprinted or stamped, and such plate or plastic label shall be affixed in an accessible place on a doorpost, under the bonnet, or on the frame of the motor vehicle concerned. To provide that such affixing shall not be removed, altered, or obliterated or mutilated, and which cannot be transferable from one vehicle to the other. Regulation 66 is amended by making a provision that in case where a mass measuring certificate is required, same shall be obtained by the applicant at his or her own expense from a person in charge of a registered weighbridge facility. 66A and 66C is intended to provide for the manner of application for the registration of a weighbridge facility, the manner of registration of a weighbridge facility, and the manner of cancellation or suspension of a registered weighbridge facility. 69 is amended to allow an examiner of motor vehicles to also test a motor vehicle issued with a motor trade plate for the purposes of certifying such motor vehicle as roadworthy, as opposed to the current provision that prohibits the testing of such motor vehicle. 79 is amended to compel a proxy as representative of the holder of a motor trade number if the person or street address changes to notify the appropriate registering authority within 1 day. 84 is amended to allow the operation on a public road of a motor vehicle which is to be registered and licensed in the Republic in terms of Chapter 3 of the Act but has not been registered and licensed or is registered in terms of Chapter 3 of this Act but not licensed or which may not otherwise be operated on a public road with a temporary permit. 99 is amended to categorize a hollow structure under a class and code of a driving license because this is a new category of a motor vehicle which came into being with the amendment of the National Road Traffic Act. 107 is amended to make provision that when a person applies for a driving license, which authorizes him or her to drive an articulated motor vehicle or a combination of a motor vehicle, the practical test shall also be conducted while the semi-trailer is attached to the subtractor or to the trailer is attached to the drawing vehicle. 113 is amended to make a provision where a notice of a license holder's non-residential or postal address in terms of Section 22 of the Act shall be given on a prescribed form to the appropriate registering authority of the license holder and shall be accompanied by proof of such change. Regulation 114 is amended by the insertion of Regulation 114G to Regulation 114Q to provide for the manner of registration of driving schools, the requirements to be met by driving schools, the manner of approval for the appointment of an instructor by a registered driving school, the grades of driving schools, and the cancellation or suspension of a registered driving school, and the duties placed on an owner of a driving school. 117 is amended to prohibit a person from applying for a professional driving permit if such person makes an application before a period of 4 years has lapsed from conviction of an offense or admission of guilt five. Under 8 is amended to make a provision whereby a motor vehicle which is older than 10 years and older shall, from the date determined by the minister by noticing the accident, be required to be undertaken for a periodic motor vehicle testing. 149 is amended to include a whole instructor.
Driving time,
require the recording of such a driving time, prescribe the duties to be followed by the operator or owner in relation to the maintenance and preservation of records produced when recording such driving time. 305 is amended by inspecting regulation 305A to 305G, which prescribes circumstances under which a physically disabled person may be exempted from the provisions of parking. The applications for exempting a disabled person regarding the provision relating to parking, the manner of issuance an exemption certificate, and the validity thereof of a disabled parking sticker. 380 is amended by setting regulation 338 to 330D to prohibit a person from offering and accepting on an overloaded vehicle, require a container of goods to have a method of determining the mass of the goods transported, to compel the driver or operator of a motor vehicle to carry a goods declaration in the motor vehicle, and to require a consignee or consignor to ensure that goods are carried to be carried on a motor vehicle and the motor vehicle. Schedule 2 is amended by inserting forms that have been inserted in the NFCA as a result of the amendment to the provisions of the National Road Traffic Act. The process of consultations went through the interprovincial policy and procedure, whereby all the provinces were part and parcel of the consultation process. The driver technical committee, the vehicle technical committee, were in all manufacturers, the SABS, the the SABS, the SAPS, and all role players and stakeholders within the motor vehicle industry are part and parcel of the deliberations that happen when we discuss vehicle specifications. It also went through the provincial Department of Transport, local authorities, and the automobile manufacturer of South Africa, NAMSA.
My name is Jyoti Nyoboti. I'm the Kalamena by the Inherent Driving Committee on the pushing of the delegated legislation to look into the regulation as presented. And what we do when we look into the in our scrutiny, we look into the scrutiny criteria, which is specified in the interim rule for that specific committee. And when we consider these regulations, we are happy that all the elements of the scrutiny criteria are met. But there's one thing that we like to bring to the attention of the committee, which we also brought to the attention of the interim committee. There are a couple of regulations, and I'm going to stick in just to the set of regulations that was sent to Parliament, because we later on realized that there was another set that was in the government gazette, which is not different from the one that was sent to us, except for the dates that have been through, but still having the same impact. There are a couple of regulations, for an example, a draft regulation 20, which speaks to I will book the specific regulations. Regulation 20 reads, it reads, no person shall operate on a motor, on a public road, a motor vehicle manufactured after the 1st of October 2012. And also regulation 36 also speaks of October 2012 with respect of that regulation. The regulations that we pick up are the ones that have retrospective effect. And what I mean by that is they are referring to the dates that have passed already. And that's the area where we are concerned about with respect of the draft of the regulations, because legally you do not legislate, or you are not allowed to in the regulation or the specific legislation to legislate the prospectively, which means in the court house. Because the challenge with that is when it comes to whoever is supposed to comply with that specific legislation or regulation, there are issues of how are you going to help hold them responsible for that offense, and offense if the date has passed. So what we are recommending the department in conclusion is that the department should consider looking into those dates and making them the dates of the future, which means regulating not prospectively, but regulating for the future, which means the central regulation is coming to operation. Therefore, the date should reflect from the date that it comes into operation about the date that has passed. So that's one thing that we brought to the attention of the committee, which we would like to bring to the attention of this committee as well. Except for that, everything is in order as far as our scrutiny criteria is concerned.
Thank you very much. I will now open an opportunity for members to ask questions and make comments. Honorable Olu.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I'm glad we finally got to see the set. It's good enough time, but we have these comments today. Thank you. I have questions. I have only one question about the Act itself, but I have three questions about the implementation of it. About the Act itself, I'm surprised that the legal advisors have not commented at all on Regulation 13A, because it seems pretty logical when you read it at first. But it's got some implications which I'm not sure have been thought about. You know, unforeseen, that word unforeseen. There's some unforeseen implications of that. And I haven't been briefed by anybody, I've read it myself, and I can immediately see the problem. The third part of that most vehicle which was deregistered in terms of Regulation 55 is permanently demolished, shall not be registered. Up to there, I'm fine. Because it's logical. You don't want a vehicle that's bent out of shape to now suddenly get roadworthy again, and that makes logical sense. But the second part of that sentence could potentially shut down an entire industry. And get a second-hand matter. That we take it off a car that is off. The car is written off, we scrap the car. But it's got a bumper at the back that still is in good condition. You can buy that bumper and have it resprayed in the colour of your car and put in your car for half the price that you would have to pay Honda to get that bumper new. The way this is worded, it says its parts, let's presume all of its parts, shall not be used to build or repair any motor vehicle. The rest of this I've read through and I'm happy with it, but that sentence worries me because it says I can't use the parts. Its parts shall not be used to repair any material. I don't like the way that's worded because it could shut down the second-hand parts industry. I can tell you those people will get organized and start chattering on our doors to say, hey, how did you agree to this? The wording of that sentence is not right. You should, up to there the sentence is fine, but that last part appears to me to be shutting down an entire industry. Has that industry been consulted? Do you want to think about changing the wording, or do you want to consult that industry? Have you got proof that you've consulted that industry to check whether that's acceptable? I'm worried about that sentence. I don't see the committee member that does like, yes, man. They will come bang on my door. I don't want to hang on my door. I'll send them somewhere else. I really didn't think we need to rethink that. The rest of the text, I don't see any problems with it. I think it's fine. And then the thing, implementation, the road where the after 10 years must be done every 2 years. Actually, I think that's a good thing. I think that we now saying that road with vehicles, when they get older, start to fall after, we must actually do that. I just worry about implementation. Has the department got enough test centers out there, legal test centers out there, to process the burden of extra vehicles? I don't know what the numbers are. You know, we in Parliament here don't keep statistics on how many vehicles are on the road and all that sort of jazz. But I'm sure the department has those statistics. Do we have enough test centers that are legal and operating properly to accommodate the extra burden, because it's going to be lots more roadworthy that you're going to have an issue every 3 years, every car that comes back. How many cars in the country are over 10 years old, and do we have a capacity for that? A few other questions. The foreign driving permits, I had a query the other day from somebody who had worked overseas for a couple of years and then came back to South Africa and wanted to renew their driver's license, but their driver's license overseas was written in Spanish. And no one in the centers where you go to get your driver's license can read Spanish. So they didn't know whether that was a legitimate driver's license to convert. And I referred to the department and the whole process started to try to sort this thing out. Do you have capacity to deal with that sort of problem under these regulations and with capacity in the office? How do you deal with driving licenses and permits to people being abroad and have a legal driver's license or permit from Spain and you have to now convert it back? And then finally, taxa. There's been so much talk about that all over the country. Every city and every province is fighting about whose job it is to regulate them and whose job it is to license them and all that sort of jazz. So any comment to the regulation of that? I understand we're not going to change the law for them, but do these regulations make some sort of provision that either provinces or cities should license them and so on? I'm not saying that we must change it, I'm just asking. If you can tell me it's already case before you listen to this regulation, then I'll cover it. Thanks, Jacob.
Yes,
it's not quite a good headstart for fashion. first time. Can I just clarify that to Paramount? I don't know, I think it's all in there. So that's kind of the picture. I'm just saying what the human has.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me try and deal with the issues of the second hand part. It's understandable, as the Master Chair has said, to say the first part that you can get is a genuine part from a graveyard or a salvage company dealing with those type of. The intention of the department, obviously, is to consider that the all the stakeholders in terms of making provision or provision we are trying to deal with here is basically motor vehicles that as a service company or as a dealer of second-hand parts. You have informed us that you have completely demolished this motor vehicle. You have a vehicle that is written off by the insurance company, which is not obviously demolished, and it gets sold to the service companies, and they obviously pay for those vehicles. You also then have good ones that are bought by scrapyard dealers that obviously trade with second-hand parts. But within that framework, you then also have either a title holder or an owner of a motor vehicle that said, my vehicle has been demolished. Now, the demolishing aspect works in two ways. One, you demolish it for the event that you do not want to continue paying license fees for a motor vehicle that does not exist. So what you do is then to say to us, I'm demolishing this motor vehicle. That certificate, we take that certificate, and then we deregister the motor vehicle. Because that is why we're saying you must have a certificate or submit a certificate that says somebody has demolished this motor vehicle. There were incidences whereby people said, my vehicle is demolished, only to find out it's for the purposes of circumventing licensing of motor vehicle. So what we require is to say, have a certificate that says it has been demolished, it's no longer in use. So, those are the vehicles that we want to address. The issue about the vehicles that get deregistered on the system as a result of being involved in an accident and sold to a service company, but are not demolished. And those vehicles, or those parts of vehicles can still be traded on. But we as a department, we are going further to a certain extent. If you recall, some time ago, we, in dealing with theft of motor vehicles, we provided for micro dotting of motor vehicles, wherein to the extent that we want to deal with the case of hijacking and theft of motor vehicles, we said the vehicles must be micro dotted, but we did not require micro dotting on all the parts. We selected those critical parts that would assist the SAPS in ensuring the recovery of motor vehicles. The minor one, if I do not want the micro rotted, it's for me as the owner that they have demand the micro rotted. But those critical parts, we have made it a requirement to say micro rot those parts. And it's just good as the SAPS in dealing with the top shop that we have around the country. But basically, We do not want to get rid of the industry that trades with second-hand parts to a certain extent. As long as it's not demolished per se, that good part can still be utilized to repair another vehicle. Although, Madam Chair, if your wipers sit on the sun, they get hardened and then they are no longer good to have your windscreen, so the arm. Okay. Yes. But basically, we the intention, we very well of us getting a certain part of the active industry in the Republic out of business, and if to a certain extent the provisions of the legislation are such that going to do that, what we will do is then just to streamline and make it clear not roadway. You see, the service company tells me later, we have not been tested if it's roadway. So somebody gets into that and then that vehicle is not safe. But the intention here is just to deal with those type of vehicles which have been demolished and a certificate hasn't submitted to say this vehicle has been demolished. The question relating to...
Can I interject? To me, there is a difference between a second-hand car and a car from the demolished car. Those, to me, are two different things. Using the part of the car that is set to demolish and using a second-hand car of a crash does not necessarily mean that it's a car. It means it is a car that is no longer allowed to be on the road. So if we are then saying using, we need to differentiate between those two so that we are clear as to. So that we address the issue raised by Honorable Point of not in the process of correcting this wrong, then closing down the great class that happened in the past.
Thank you very much. And then, it is very true that US on its own is it has some unintended consequences. We will go back and elaborate on this. This is much more prudent to us than us. Because all of this I'm saying should therefore reflect. Not in so much detail, but should reflect in the amendment.
Thank you. I think that's the right thing to do. I mean, I think that, for example, when they might have gone to cost may not be recalled if they are not part of that vehicle. I mean, that's one thing that should be in think of then as a G to fix. If suddenly all the micro dotted parts around the boxes, you know they're stolen because it should stay on that car. Alternatively, how the second hand part industry will relate to this thing, I think should be explained. The intention I think is correct. I think your intention is correct. I think it might be worded a little bit more for you so that you know, the judge might have to direct the second hand part is and then the judge has to say, well, what does it say? And I think it might have to be a little more careful about it. Really.
Thank you.
Responding to the question of foreign driving permit or driving license. What we require is that the holder thereof is obviously required to have the driving license translated into English by the embassy, which allows all our GLTC to be able to deal with one and the validity of that driving license to a certain extent. So it's a requirement that it must be translated into English. The question of the testing station, we currently been engaged as a department in addressing one, the availability of motor vehicle testing stations, also then in the same note try to deal with fraud and corruption within the testing environment. And also try to deal with the cost implication of this specific requirement. So we are still engaging consultation on all those aspects to ensure that, as the honourable members are aware of, is that we do not have unintended consequences of the problem. Because if you look at it, it's going to be costly for owners of all vehicles to take their vehicles for periodic motor vehicle testing. So we need to cover the question of cost adequately. And in the same note, we will also then deal with the question of fraud and corruption, and make sure that once the requirement becomes applicable, the members of the public do not have difficulty in accessing testing stations to take their motor vehicles to be tested. Yes, Madam Chair. Yes, honorable member. Everything you have done driving, you keep it in your hand. Unfortunately, it will be required to go for annual operating to be contesting. The honorable member, yes, unfortunately, no vehicle. Even if you do not drive it, it has to go to testing for the motor vehicle testing. It was easier for us if we were going to look at the distance and the kilometer traveled. But it's unfortunate that we do not have control of those aspects. It becomes difficult for testing stations to check whether there was tampering with the reading or the speedometer reading of your own computer. So it becomes problematic to implement the longest version. The easiest way is then to say 2 years, go for motor vehicle testing. The issue of the hard car is not regulated anywhere. It's the prerogative of the local authority and the province to see how they regulate this type of transport within their jurisdiction. It's a question that was raised with Joe T. We haven't come to a finality in terms of saying the articles themselves, how then do you classify and cater for them in terms of licensing, in terms of the requirement for driving license. So we still have to thoroughly unpack the requirement relating to TATA, but currently it's still within the domain of the local authority and the province concerned. The question relating to the portion dealing with the date of first licensing of the motor vehicle, I think what we wanted to deal with is that in instances where your vehicle was registered and licensed in a country of origin, but when it comes into the system in the Republic, we are able then to can distinguish whether for purposes of our system is it regarded as new or is it regarded as old vehicle. So we wanted to address that aspect to say for our process, whether to redeem this vehicle as being new or as being used for that purpose.
In terms of the SAP standard, I know we want to see the best quality of our pilots. Now, where there is under quality of the vehicle, I'm asking what the public transport standards and everything that is holding our standard is. And in podcasts that are not part of our standards, in terms of the public transports, how do we measure the two numbers so that we get what he allows now? That you find some of the vehicles are not up to standard of our own, in terms of weather, in terms of the road infrastructure, in terms of they have built taxis and so on. But they knew, and there was a lot of accidents on our road. How do you bring this kind of? Second issue for me, Chairperson, in my government would be on this issue of the taxis. I know in the first world country, Canada, or if they find out the fault on your car, they penalize you to an extent that you invest that tenant forces you to buy another car, another new car, and to invest this one. That is that you should keep in mind? What is it? Well, sorry, if you
don't
move to take a fault in your testing, two penalties. And if a person does not repair that car because of the penalty, he or she cannot take that car on the road. It means then that he or she will have to sell that car so that he can a better car than this one that is 10 years old. Any politics behind this?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We haven't went to the extent of putting in penalties when we discover that the vehicle is not operating. So far, we want to address the question of the roadway status for now, and maybe at a later stage we can then consider whether attaching a penalty for a vehicle which has been found to be on roadway. But I would presume that once you take your vehicle to a certain station and then it gets filled, and then you bring it again, it gets filled, and then bring it again, it gets filled, you end up then saying to say, hey, it's costing me too much money to keep this vehicle, let me just dispose of it. The question that you asked in terms of the SABS and the standard, it's a question that from DOT and the SABS, we're trying to address, because one, we live in an environment where our manufacturers and importers do not necessarily design motor vehicles for the South African market. And also then those vehicles have to comply with the ECE requirements. So what the SABS has done is to say, in terms of the testing of motor vehicles, one is to ensure that those vehicles, if ever they are to be operated in the South African conditions, it's common cause that you need to ensure that it can operate within this particular type of environment. So it's a question that we need to look into in terms of the SABS process to say, when you homologate that means when they test this vehicle, do they specifically look at the variables that may occur on the vehicle as a result of the South African kind of conditions and temperatures. If you look at VW is a German car. If you drive it here, it gets too hot because it was manufactured for the German environment or the cold environment. So those are the things that we obviously need to address. But for now, the requirement in terms of introducing a motor vehicle into the Republic, one is that it has to comply with the ECE requirement. It has to comply with the South African standards of that motor vehicle. Unfortunately, you may have those type of vehicles that complies with those standards, but as a result of the operational conditions, some of these parts can run off quicker than it was envisaged.
Sure. I think the first set knows that perhaps we just to deal with the last one or two. The chairperson, the as we deal with the comments and finalize the amendment, obviously the issues are not that to be corrected so that they do not have application of the international path. That is But if you look at this, the and then the intention of that will therefore be finalized and approved before December. That's why the days of around December 25. So we'll deal with that question. Also, yeah, on the issue of in terms of the registration of the girl itself, I think the question was covered by Mother Day. But in terms of commercial licenses also, once registered, they need to be treated like your focus one or the test taxi. And those regulations are within the jurisdiction of the province, so they can deal with those kind of challenges. But a new gather around there, even the issue around the table, you find it is a first out of the fund. So whichever comes back, because it could be leaking under this for the first month that it is not being driven, and then it become a hazard. And then I reminded the principal. But also, this issue, we rely heavily on transport. So it's a regulation. But in terms of the other standards and specifications, standards of Africa comes into the picture. Very prominently, that is the whole SAPS. That's why even the code of church from SAPS to Congress, 2000 and whatever. And now the homologate the brand of that introduction. And it takes through rigorous testing for all conditions of South Africa. But nothing prevents any person who comes to play a particular vehicle is of a certain quality. But that person can be best answered and addressed by some standard of Africa or SAPS. More than us here. We specialize in capacities and related issues, but on the issue of homologation, it's always SAPS. That's why all of those who come and complain about those kind of vehicles, we take them and go with them to SABS, because we also do not want to issue permits or operating licenses to be a conductor of a poor pilot. So the tools or the measures that they use, if they have a vehicle, as transport, it is very difficult for us to say, no, it cannot be your stupid South African road. That is the one of the bigger challenges. And what I'm saying is that a homologation, it has the introduction of the vehicle, has the issue around the road itself, the road with the testing. Because the right one was that that's the print vehicle that come later, the issues around quality becomes an issue.
Thank you. I think the presentation was good. And I also want to say that there are cases in the presentation announcement in the reduction of just one question. It's a general question. I think it comes to the on page 5, you are saying that the interval value that you can achieve is up. And before you do that, I
Thank you. Thank you. around the law enforcement. So it's like this, just
challenges that were and are still existing. That way, and I feel experienced by Selena and some of the gaps that are there in terms of policy statements and also issues around the long-term standard. The focus is therefore chapter on Selena, but as it relates to the quality of services and vehicles and the components and conduct of both the land and operators. What the issues around the code of conduct will talk to. And then enhancement of the discipline on the roads. Whether it's vehicle fitness, driver fitness, and safety issues. And my dream for scholar transport basically service, dedicated service, transport service, that you can be contracted by an implementing agent or a contracting authority for the transportation of learners. And the evidence is unconducted because there's also private transport organized by private providers themselves. Although it has all those in terms of safety issues, they are not necessarily relevant when it comes to design planning for the type of services. There are those buses and vehicles that are owned by schools themselves and are not necessarily a factor when it comes to the contracting authority or implementing agent, but they are the domain of either SGP or the school management. In terms of application, applicability, that I indicated, the policy will apply to all public schools. Private transport or privately arranged transport shall be dealt with in the context of the National Road Transport Act. A whole incident, but also very relevant, that we also today due to amended regulation. Because I want to make it very clear, Honorable Chair. Private transport transporting the private car for undertaking a charge to school, the other laws will apply. That is the NRTA. It should be noted that the issue around intergovernmental relations is also very key. As I talked about the collaboration between ourselves and physical education, you must remember that there's been a contestation around who should provide solar transport. But when it comes from a transport perspective, and say this is our responsibility, education will come and say the transport of learners is part of the education of the child. And we have dealt with that, we've now collaborated. The issues that are spoken to service standards and procedures, the accessibility design and planning of roads, the safety aspects, issues around capacity building and skills development, more especially on the managers of contracting authorities in terms of the expectations, and also MNE, which as you explained further down in terms of the level, whether it's development or implementation, that it is your responsibility to education and transport. Just in terms of objectives, that is to improve access to quality education by providing the same visual defects personalized ways that we use in transport. But we talk to about coordinated and aligned transport systems, which would talk to all the other aspects of our public transport space to manage the implementation of integrated labor transport services and then effective management of labor transport systems and the field support environment for learners. The outcome was what the police, I think the police should achieve as outcome should be the following: timeout and reverse of service, reduction of even safe transport, that's of the reduction of accidents, coordinated opposing labor to planning and implementation, intergovernmental collaboration, and intact departmental collaboration. Our global transport operators are here to both types of regulation. And the issues around the maintenance and support for reactors in particular, when they have raised out the related issues, what is the process from the operator? All of this in detail will be in the contract, but the financial assessment of the replacement of the aircraft, viable and sustainable operation, in a committee of privacy, which is very key, because as we speak now, each and every province does its own issues in relation to the management of the whole transport service. That's so vast and varying. There are those who started 3 kilometers, there are those who started 5 kilometers. There are those who, like I indicated, charge a different tariff price than the other. And then the issue around the monitoring and evaluation, MLD. Principal, assistance, equity, everything, that is to do with the equity, but access to transport for learners, the quality and effectiveness that deals with the issues of quality roadworthiness of the vehicle, but what you do when there's a major functional relevancy, operational safety and efficiency, and sustainability and integration. From here on, chapters, and this therefore forms part of the mega plan. After the statement, I mean, after your policy of justice and outcomes and principles, this basically becomes a policy statement, and this becomes the relevant section in the policy document itself. The first issue here is role and responsibility. There is a role in terms of the development review and monitoring of the policy, and that therefore is a responsibility of transport and the education. The political department would then have to deal with implementation and the provision of learner transport. Where the Department of Transport provisionally deals with issues of permissions and operation licenses, education will have to identify learners and beneficiaries, and the two as they collaborate come up with designs and planning of a particular group. And then the management. We're calling for a coordination mechanism. That is slide 18. A coordination mechanism at a national level. More especially to look into the gaps and provide strategic leadership and direction, but also look into the gaps for purpose of reviewing what we would have developed at the national level. And then try to call for joint reporting. Obviously, there will always be an issue where each minister would require how to deal with the reporting lines in the first 5 months. And then there are supposed to be implementation committees of structure between transport and education. On the identification of needs and on the designs and plans of the particular scholar transport routes and therefore the monitoring of the services. But you would recall, while the numbers are very stable in the transport space, here, each year you need to review the numbers just to show that to look whether there's been an increase in learner number or a decrease. From three reasons, the new entrance into a school do not necessarily equate to those that exist, those that pass at the end of the term. So there are always issues around the review of the numbers. Throughout the year, there will be fairly stable. There will be changes here and there. And then the issue around the planning. And this is the statement that I also would want to perhaps because I want to believe that it is this COVID. As I said, that it is to be very clear that transport policy development and implementation should be the domain of the transport. But not a very easy issue to the Department of Education. But also to treasure
Who have read that the Ramsey do that was seem to be closing on to Section 39 of the Constitution that gives the Premier the prerogative to allocate functions from the representatives. And that implication, like I indicated, it needs to be evolved by your PSTS, the strategic plans, the APs or LEDs, and our own integrated transport plans as they are in the National Transport Act. And issues of safety, norms and standards, very clear that our responsibility, Department of Transport, from the transport point of view, would obviously take into consideration the issues and inputs of education and how they would want learners to be supported. As for the issue of safety, norms and standards and regulations, and they are sophisticated, that remains out of the that's just the last one in terms of the National Road Traffic Act. Full compliance with the requirements and general regulations of the NRTA. Operating licenses, as they are in the NRTA for all other transport users. Once somebody gets a contract, it becomes automatic that they need to be provided with operating licenses. That does not even go to the different objections. Because we think or would have thought that that has been obtained in a fair manner. And then the issue of African registration and coordination. This comes to the land use and transport planning integration. For my school days, I've been grappling with this dichotomy. And it looks like we do it after some time, but we do. And have always advocated for integration into the two. For example, here, it would have been better and much, much better if we were planning schools. We are therefore mindful of anticipated services that do not go to those schools. In particular, transport services. It will take a while to build a road to provide services to a school that is across the river than a school that is on this side of the river. Although considerations of the building of schools look into all other facts and proximity to villages and communities. But we believe that at that initial stage, for purpose of proper planning of the transport, we need to therefore be involved. This goes for human settlement, this goes for all other things. But putting the pressure, and this is a South African fact, the pressure will always be on Jakarta, and then transport later. We don't have a bigger problem, but we would want to be involved in the transport so that we prepare ourselves for transport planning. Beneficiaries, the selection and beneficiaries of this type of services will always be the members of the Department of Education. They own the schools and they know who is supposed to be serviced by scholar transport. It is an easy thing, it becomes easy in closed up communities, but in some schools, in particular, that was a difficult thing. Where everyone in each learner has the right to be supported or to ask. You are going to have the difficulty of going to get each and every child each morning, get them all school on time. Because of the sparse nature of farm dwellings, one. But two, change. The very same reasons that the change is spoken about, of the conditions of roads. So, while we believe that they are the end of beneficiaries, all of this is for becoming perfect. We must indicate, we must raise expectations
That is the judicial bureau who will cast each and every element. It's not going to be possible. And the service design for Leonard Hanford, that talks to these issues I've spoken about, both infrastructure and facilities, that's a requirement. And the confirmed and contracted, and again here, we're moving away, slightly away from who should contract out of these services. But we're saying if you contract out of these services, you need to comply with all of these elements that are in the policy. Because for some reason, the premier decided that it is the requirement of finance that needs to provide this service. They need to apply our policies. If it's education, again, they need to do the same. Much more easier if it is transport, because they will understand the transport requirement. And the issues around stabilization of the infrastructure, again, a very contested area. If you standardize and this becomes it is not worth tendering because the prices will be low. I mean, the number is always said that perhaps we need to disclose the tender amount just so that there is no competition and we vote and adjudicate based on the quality of services. One of the things I the problem is not an issue of transport only, but also the error of public transport. Most because we pay per kilometer, we don't want to pay per person. We take a kilometer. So some of these infrastructures are determined and unknown. And then the types of services that is contractor services, we are not necessarily addressing issues of later price services as I have indicated that there are no advantages of that. And then the organized parties or the transport organized by Elena. There are learners who organize transport, not for daily uses, but for people to go to special services, to go to games and issues like that. And then the sexual security, we are emphasizing on the issues around the secure transportation of scholars, in particular the issues that must be displayed on the aircraft and on the operating permit related to respective issues. There's a trend these days to try and emulate what other countries are doing. When government buys the aircraft, they are branded as access, scholar public works, aircraft. Just like the famous thing of access from the USA, which are known to be scholar transports. But we believe that even if it is privately provided or for contractors to private operator, you can subject them to some form of a branding. That's so that they are known as other transport. We used to call that kind of practice car coding. Not necessarily the hand of the vehicle, but the mask that identified. At the height of the system violence, we used that quite often. In terms of identification, whether the vehicle is on the wrong or the right foot. And then law enforcement issues cannot be overemphasized. And the issues around the punishment of armed weapons vehicles. Then what we call the special conditions of contract. This will be much more limited than what was said earlier on the normal armored vehicles that we sent back to repair and back. But this one, a broken glass should be have penalties. A main device should have penalties. The device that is prone to regular breakdowns should have penalties. And all of those are included in the contract. Driver and learner behavior facilitated earlier on. I talked about the behavior of drivers, but we also are advocating and will issue draft code of conduct for both learners and drivers in terms of how they need to conduct themselves when it comes to this type of services. Funding, very limited, but very significant and high impact. Should we have a dedicated grant like we have in terms of public transport? and in other areas around the world. We will overcome these issues around shortage of fighters. In almost all the provinces, around August, September, services getting done because of insufficient budget and so on. But if you play properly and the money is reinvested, and if Treasury says this is supplementary taxation for the dollar, it needs to be low, just so that other money then needs to be found. So make sure that we to cover for the entire school periods. And broken services in this area, very, very dire. Even much more, I mean, an adult or a worker can call his or her boss and say, I'm late or I won't be coming, there's no transport. Sometimes it becomes unattendable. But for kids to meet a man, it's very serious because there's no transport. Exactly. And then the LED cannot be overemphasized. But LED goes beyond the monitoring of the implementation of the policy. It also goes to the monitoring of the physical contact. That's why it is both a policy and program and project. Project basically is individual contact. You need to have people who police a contact to be sure that the service is surrender. If you take a kilometer, you must make sure that no bus leaves a school at a bus stop. Because whether the bus are empty or full, they will still be paid because they are 50 kilometers. So you need to ensure that the operators don't run the buses up and down empty and go and play. Unlike public transport, which is also a very difficult thing to manage, this is even much more difficult because you will have where public transport operators can sometimes in between utilize the services. In this area, we don't want those open trips to interfere either with the afternoon peak where they need to go to the children or the morning peak where they need to go to the children to take them to school. So in terms of costs, it will be much more higher than your normal transport because there is no subsidization in this area. All especially it is dedicated transport like branded transport. But there is no more longer for the transport bus that will be allowed to go into Kanemazwa and go and pick up workers during off-peak period. So that's why it's always slightly higher in terms of cost because they are only utilized twice a day if they don't have certain trips. And there's no contact law. That's the bigger problem. There's no, you can't go there at 8 and come back with Lennar at 8 in the morning because they will be in school. So it's one way in the morning and one way in the afternoon. Honorable Chair, this timeline, we just hope and hope against hope that they will not be moved today. We are very, very tired in terms of meeting the July if we don't go to cabinet next time, the next cabinet, in terms of cabinet allowing us to address, we will miss July again. And we have been shifting them for some time. Hopefully, from here and from this meeting, we will get input from the committee. But it also provides the community with an opportunity, what we can say, to come and engage stakeholders. Just so that we finish this process well before the hands of the financial media. We ask this to implement it and we will review it as we go. Honorable Chair. All of this is just indicated and perhaps to indicate who will consult us. We would want to also bring to the attention of the committee that as we do the final rounds internally within the transport sector, more especially between provinces and the national department, which include the SAUNA, what is you that says the majority of the issues in your policy, and perhaps this is why the policy is taking too long, are operational. Is there no way that you can deal with these issues in the form of minimum requirements, norms, standards, and guidelines, other than coming up with a policy? Well, we would still continue to have done that, but we believe that there is nothing wrong also in terms of the framework that it is, as the policy is. Hence, we are saying that if that is the law, we does not say there is nothing wrong with the policy. It doesn't mean that a faster way to deal with this is to deal with non-standard. But we have also indicated to the committee that that process for this financial year, the issue of developing non-standard codes of conduct and all related issues that I've mentioned in terms of the policy is a process that is going on as we speak. Then, we recommend that the committee know the work done so far and support us in this particular one, particularly as the issue of gazetting is for final comment.
Thank you.
Two of them.
and him. My son, he needs transfer to go to school. At least, let's say, grammar to go to school. Just for the kids to go to school, people to go to clinic, people to go to hospital. Let's just say that. But if on a transport, we will not say no, it is impossible. We keep on saying, fast, keep on trying. That's for those children. Keep learning, Yonata, that it will never be there. If you need a problem, you can use a little kid. I will lay a quick man, it's a little kid. Lay a then you can blame for it.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm appreciating the report in this course. This is actually my confidence at the end of the day, the youth from Japan. And I just want to check from the presenters whether they have the audits of the various scores from the various companies in terms of the number of learners that those scores have in relation to the transports that is compared to the various schools. And also, you consider those matters in your policy, because I'm just thinking along that the Eastern Cape one stage did make a research on the issue when they were trying to develop the school on the number of learners, number of farms, in those areas, and so on. So that we consider the type of transport, not the one necessarily relating to 1920 here, or even 1990. So that, because you find that, especially in farm schools, you find that the staff schools, farm schools, needs to be rationalized, rather built in hostels. And those then are to be transported back home at the end of the week or month, so that we cut the cost. I'm looking at what you're saying, it's impossible to fund each and every transport as a staff. But surely we need to be creative to think along the lines of hotels and so on, so that also to avoid the long distances, the incoming dropouts in various schools because of the bad weather and so on. Have you made that kind of research so that it can enhance or enrich this policy that you are crafting and be more creative along those lines? Also, it will have an impact on what department that seems to be an attempt of education, sport education, on sports days where it's not provided from one school to another when they on that study or the education guided by the calendar of curriculum. The second issue that I think for me would be the issue that the issue of the defense of those funds. Also, because this matter must go into a little bit of research when you want to make some presentation to provide funds, because you need to develop a policy and not being followed by funds. And if you have not done your research accurately, the learner, the transport, the kilometer, and so on. So that when you go to Treasury, you go there with a comprehensive document that has so much we need, and this money you are going to invest it. So that also tells you the service provided to that transport. And I'm not sure how much I budget for that. But all the chairperson in this matter of investing, we have been coming with it quite some time, but to go away. My last issues on the issue of contact of the program itself. I don't see a strong emphasis on those who are supposed to monitor, because you see this issue of transport given the experience that we had from the cases, people reporting distances, vehicles and everything else. Some are saying they are fairly learners from point A to point B, I know the police was talking about 5 kilometer radius in terms of walking of the child. But of course, it's less than 500 meters, but they do make some admission to claim, because they see this as a loophole, because they are not monitoring, people are monitoring this program, you know, so that it's not getting get abused by those who are mischievous to the city. So I would like the department to place much more emphasis, even from parents, whatever, to
put much more emphasis
on the issue of monitoring. So that there is qualitative reporting to you, to your committee, and so on. I'm a little bit concerned around that matter. Come then. In the next, we will talk more on the paper kilometer. Not the child, because this loophole where in the deep rural areas where they don't want them to help them, the service providers overload their transport, you know, so that there is no way of going around these matters. I'm just looking to wonder if they want to keep the kilometer, not the child, maybe we should elaborate a little bit on that. So that we equate or balance that with the intended outcome of the department. Thank you very much, sir.
On Subject to challenge.
only after Department of Health in the issue of transportation. Yes, I was not told by Umundrawa Transport and no other application the type of a seat that I need to sit on because of my weak back that has resulted in being incapacitated. The same would apply in terms of the seat in Ghana, the specification of the seat designed to fit a child. And among those children, there are those that are physically challenged, who are under the observation of the Department of Health. They are associated with the government. But because Abana goes about the players, but for Stella, so, but also, in terms of accessing in the code, the actual is a driver. No driver, no one did anything in Anela. It was LK. We got the code. There were other cars. That's really different from someone. I think, so I'm going to work as a team in Anela. Itamba is saying that the power of the people, and they are putting us in the name of the need. What would I hear? The car is in the Wamulanga. Our government is not about access to the department of our health, but the manager of our health, or what you do, who is going to be able to do anything, and we are going to be able to do anything. I am going to be able to do something for us. In that, we are going to be able to do something. As in now, who put a transport and never to never got that header in an SD for great one. Who social is building a man and you have to be in the country. And children that have been taken there are also transported by the more normal. Now,
so people
policy must fit to that. It could be which level and the protector. It would have gone in that way the protector being asked. And then, ngoba halona bakhambisa ngamavele le ayiphutuphutwa ena 1314 uyisakalibele la eFrance yena intombazana agcina eseyishukazeki yona yona iqale ithi iyohlala kahle ayiphotha kutoze igcine sekungolisazi wakhe ngenkalo so bonke lezo zingakhe zenze zibone
Now we're going to develop Here that was planned, that's all our plan. for two for my time, which the cabinet has approved to take in the parliament. And I think they will be through the relevant channels in the cabinet, which I have for the Jefferson Court to make a presentation of that. Not sure whether that will happen before the 20 years or not. But already I'm certain about two which cabinet has been approved. But those are my time. The process is once we get the final draft here, the general submission goes to minister for approval, then it goes to cabinet. Before it goes to cabinet, we make a presentation to the cluster, that is the committee for the digits. Then thereafter, once they give a blessing, it goes to the cabinet committee. They look at it and they recommend the cabinet for approval. Then thereafter, we get the certification of federal government and then the parliamentary process. So that's why I'm saying we've got two bills which have undergone the particular process. We have already approved by them. The bills which are not yet even recommended by the cluster, even approved by the cabinet, I can't guarantee that they will be here for the years of June. Never. I don't think so, because we need to also get dates from the cluster, so we need to get dates for the cabinet committee to consideration. So every bill that comes there will definitely know that it's ready for the June committee, definitely. Yeah.
Ever since I joined this committee, even if the data to do with maritime, the person will come to the portfolio committee to present as for him, because of the legal instrument. The question that I'm asking would be, is there a different process where a bill would come not presented by you?
Jefferson, the custodians of the bill are the branches. So it will be legal saving is leading the process together with the relevant branch. If it's a roots bill, the DDG for roots can agree as well if it's leading, but definitely legal saving will have to be there. If it's not available, because as we work closely with the relevant branch, you understand the content and how to explain some of the things, then we proceed to explain the particular bill. So the relevant branch, DDG, and legal services will have to be available for presentation of the particular bill. You will never see an entity coming to present the bill directly to the public before Parliament, because these are bills for the department, not for the meeting.
There are
obviously the entity is aligned with the branches. So if the entity is eager to bring a DDG, obviously the relevant DDG or through his chief director, you definitely know that there is a legal service. It's only for legal
service.
Thank you.